I'm VOA's Joe Ramsey with your worldwide news update. Joe Biden used his final presidential address before the United Nations General Assembly to urge unity in the face of challenges, including conflicts in Ukraine, Gaza, and Sudan. VOA White House correspondent Anita Powell reports from New York.
Hope, unity, and service. President Joe Biden's parting message to world leaders in his final speech at the United Nations General Assembly on Tuesday. But it was this line about his decision not to seek re-election that garnered the most applause from the audience, which included leaders from the body's 193 member states.
My fellow leaders, let us never forget, some things are more important than staying in power. It's your people.
Washington's strong support of Israel has tested its standing at the UN, where many members are critical of Israel's action, both in Gaza and now in Lebanon. On Tuesday, the head of the international body warned of what he called politically indefensible and morally intolerable impunity. This annual event is a chance for the world's governments to discuss shared challenges and shared visions. The big question now, from Gaza to Ukraine to Sudan, what are they going to do about it? Anita Powell, VOA News, New York.
U.S. officials say the Biden administration will send Ukraine an undisclosed number of medium-range cluster bombs and an array of rockets, artillery, and armored vehicles in a military aid package totaling about $375 million. Officials expect an announcement on Wednesday as global leaders meet at the UN General Assembly, and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky uses his appearance there to shore up support and persuade the U.S. to allow his troops to use long-range weapons to strike deeper into Russia. This is VOA News. Israel's military said an airstrike on Beirut killed the commander of Hezbollah's missile and rocket force on Tuesday as cross-border attacks by both sides increased. Lebanese officials claim more than 500 people have been killed since Israel launched heavy strikes on Monday. Reuters correspondent Emma Jaylay reports.
Israel's military leader said the Air Force also conducted extensive strikes on Hezbollah targets, including weapons storage facilities and dozens of launchers that were aimed at Israeli territory. Hezbollah said it launched rockets on Tuesday at the Dado military base in northern Israel and attacked the Atlit naval base south of Haifa with drones. Israel's new offensive against Hezbollah has stoked fears that nearly a year of conflict between Israel and the militant Palestinian group Hamas in Gaza could destabilize the Middle East.
Reuters correspondent Emma Jaylay. A Haitian group in a town in the U.S. state of Ohio on Tuesday filed citizen criminal charges against former President Donald Trump and his running mate J.D. Vance. AP correspondent Haya Panjwani reports.
The leader of a national nonprofit representing Haitians has filed criminal charges against Trump and Vance over chaos and threats experienced in Springfield, Ohio, after they spread false claims about legal immigrants. Their lawyer says the Haitian Bridge Alliance filed the charges under a private citizen statute because local prosecutors haven't acted. The group seeks arrest warrants against Trump and Vance. More than 30 bomb threats were directed at state and local government buildings and schools, prompting closures, the assignment of additional law enforcement protection, and security cameras. Some of the city's Haitian residents have also said they feared for their safety. I'm Haya Panjwani.
Charges brought by private citizens are rare but not unheard of in Ohio. State law requires a hearing to take place before the affidavit can move forward. The man who authorities say staked out Donald Trump for 12 hours on his golf course in Florida and wrote of his desire to kill him was indicted on Tuesday on charges he attempted to assassinate the former U.S. president. Ryan Wesley Routh was initially charged with two federal firearms offenses. The upgraded charges reflect the Justice Department's assessment he plotted to kill the Republican nominee, aiming a rifle through bushes surrounding Trump's West Palm Beach golf course while Trump was playing golf. Routh left behind a note in which he described his intention. That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barkley in Washington. Today is Wednesday, September 25th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. President Joe Biden addresses the UN General Assembly for the last time.
My fellow leaders, let us never forget, some things are more important than staying in power.
African leaders make yet another appeal for a permanent seat on the UN Security Council. Meanwhile, an analyst says a permanent seat without a veto power would amount to maintaining the status quo. A new global poll finds that South Africans feel among the least safe. Ugandan and Congolese armies rescue 40 people from ADF rebels in eastern DRC.
Yesterday, there was a contact between the joint forces and the ADF, and the 27 of them were put out of action. We recovered several guns, and most importantly, were children and women, totaling to 40.
And will pro-Palestinian opposition hurt Vice President Harris in Michigan? Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Joe Biden used his final presidential address before the United Nations General Assembly to urge unity in the face of challenges, including conflicts in Ukraine, Gaza, and Sudan. VOA White House correspondent Anita Powell reports from New York.
Go ahead.
Hope, unity, and service. President Joe Biden's parting message to world leaders in his final speech at the United Nations General Assembly on Tuesday. The U.S. leader covered a lot of ground in his valedictory address before world leaders. As expected, he urged the world to work together to end conflicts in Gaza, Ukraine, and Sudan. And he touted his administration's work in health and climate mitigation. But it was this line, about his decision not to seek re-election, that garnered the most applause from the audience, which included leaders from the body's 193 member states.
My fellow leaders, let us never forget, some things are more important than staying in power. It's your people.
But his call for a peace deal to end spreading conflict in the Middle East shows how deeply divided this international body is.
Even if the situation has escalated, a diplomatic solution is still possible. In fact, it remains the only path to lasting security to allow the residents from both countries to return to their homes and the border safely. And that's what we're working tirelessly to achieve.
But the conflict in Gaza, like the one in Ukraine, will likely not end with Biden's presidency, analysts say. American Enterprise Institute senior fellow John Fortier.
I think the president is trying to toe the line that he's always towed, support for Israel, but really indicating also some sympathy and understanding of the plight in Gaza and some hope that it will be resolved, but not really being able to control the situation very directly.
Washington's strong support of Israel has tested its standing at the UN, where many members are critical of Israel's action, both in Gaza and now in Lebanon. On Tuesday, the head of the international body warned of what he called politically indefensible and morally intolerable impunity. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres.
Nothing can justify the abhorrent acts of terror committed by Hamas on October 7th or the taking of hostages, both of which I have repeatedly condemned. And nothing can justify the collective punishment of the Palestinian people.
This annual event is a chance for the world's governments to discuss shared challenges and shared visions. The big question now, from Gaza to Ukraine to Sudan, what are they going to do about it? Anita Powell, VOA News, New York.
South African President Cyril Ramaphosa used part of his speech at the 79th United Nations General Assembly in New York to reiterate Africa's demand for a more representative and inclusive UN Security Council.
Achieving and maintaining peace and security requires the collective will of the community of nations gathered here. It requires that the UN Security Council should be a more representative body and inclusive. 78 years since its formation, the United Nations Security Council remains largely unchanged. Africa and its 1.4 billion people remain excluded from its key decision-making structures. This cannot continue. The Security Council has not fulfilled its mandate to maintain international peace and security The UN Security Council must be reformed as a matter of agency. We would like to see the Security Council being more inclusive so that the voices of all nations can be heard and be considered. It cannot remain an exclusive club of just five nations to the exclusion of the many nations in the world. Africa stands ready to play its role in building a safer global order by participating in the work of the UN Security Council on the basis of respect and acceptance. The African Union and its member states are engaged in mediation, in dialogue and diplomacy across our continent to create conditions under which peace and development can take hold. There must be greater collaboration between the United Nations and the African Union towards resolving a number of conflicts and also in addressing the root causes of conflicts that continue to rage.
That was South African President Cyril Ramaphosa speaking Tuesday at the 79th United Nations General Assembly in New York. Sierra Leone President Julius Maada Bio has appealed to the United Nations to assist the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, as it combats terrorism in the Sahel region. He spoke Tuesday at the 79th United Nations General Assembly in New York.
We need collective action to stop all conflicts and engage in meaningful dialogue so that the countries can move forward with their development agenda in peace, security, and stability. As a country that has experienced the devastating consequences of armed conflict, we acknowledge that peace cannot be achieved in isolation. It requires inclusive political processes, economic development, and respect for human rights. For the millions of civilians trapped in ongoing armed conflicts, words of condemnation and empathy alone are not enough. It is imperative that we act together as the United Nations with a sustained commitment to end the cycle of violence and give innocent civilians the opportunity to enjoy lasting peace and prosperity. In the Sahel and parts of West Africa, the regional leadership has been hard at work to find urgent solutions to the numerous peace and security challenges, particularly to curb the spread of terrorism and violent extremism. I call upon the international community to strengthen support for African-led peace initiatives and for the United Nations to play a more active role in addressing the root causes of conflicts. The safety and security of the people in the Sahel and parts of West Africa require all relevant actors to engage in political dialogue and diplomacy actively to ensure we provide countries in the front line, especially Burkina Faso, Mali, Niger, the necessary support they need.
That was Sierra Leone President Julius Maada Bio speaking Tuesday at the 79th United Nations General Assembly in New York. A political analyst says he welcomes Africa's push for two new permanent seats on the UN Security Council. However, Kweku Nuama, a professor in the School of International Service at the American University in Washington, D.C., says a permanent seat without veto power will mean very little. He also tells me that it is also important for African leaders to pay more attention to doing the things that prevent internal conflicts, such as good governance and investing in their own people.
Well, it's a good thing that they are all emphasizing it, and it's a good thing that President Biden also reiterated the United States' pledge to help Africa get this representation on the Security Council. But the nature of the representation does matter. So if Africa is only going to get two permanent seats but with no veto power, then it doesn't make any real difference. But I also think that while Africans are pushing for representation, they should pay more attention to the internal sources of conflicts because those are more important than getting these seats in these big international organizations where nothing really is done at these places. It's a lot of speeches and a lot of photo ops, but no real decisions will be made. And even when decisions are made, they cannot be enforced.
When you say, Professor, they should pay more attention to the internal, what does that mean?
It means that we have to do the things that prevent conflict in the first place. Those include good governance, fighting corruption, investing in our people, making sure that we don't do reckless things that set community against community. If you can prevent conflict, then you don't have to spend a lot of efforts trying to resolve them. So we need the United Nations less if we can do the things that we need to do at home. Getting a permanent seat in the Security Council is not going to help you if you are going to misrule, if you are going to violate human rights, if you are going to underdevelop your people by stealing resources. So those are the things that Africans need to focus on. All the wounds that really, really matter are self-inflicted. So we need to spend more attention in that area than going on these international speaking tours, looking for respect abroad when we don't respect ourselves at home.
I was listening to the Sierra Leone President Julius Maada Bio. In his speech, he appealed to the United Nations for help as the West African countries deal with fighting terrorism in the Sahel region.
Well, those are the things that the United States and United Nations can help us with, because those are intelligence sharing, and also these kinds of terrorism problems tend to be global. So we need to be able to track how terrorists are getting their money, how they are getting their weapons, and all those things are things that need to be addressed multilaterally. So that's a good request.
You mentioned President Biden in his speech. He also mentioned the war in Sudan and a direct appeal to the warring factions to end the war.
The United States has a role to play in this area, because the United States has influence in the region over some of the countries that are selling weapons in that area. And even its relationship with Egypt is important, because Egypt has a role to play in this conflict. And again, the United States can help by supporting regional efforts, as it has. It's actually doing quite a bit in terms of supporting the African Union to look for a solution. It's actually sponsored a mediation session. But as for all these conflicts, the solution is going to have to come from within. And so the Sudanese themselves are willing to put aside their differences. Outsiders can help them.
Kweku Nuama is a professor in the School of International Service at American University in Washington, D.C. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Wednesday, September 25th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The Ugandan Army, the UPDF, and the Congolese Army, the FARDC, say they have successfully rescued 40 people, mostly women and children, from the Allied Democratic Forces, the ADF rebels, in northeastern Democratic Republic of Congo. The rescue occurred following fierce fighting in Biakato Mabasa territory, located about 40 miles northwest of Beni in Ituri province, where 27 ADF rebels were also killed. Major Bilal Katamba, the UPDF Mountain Division and Operation Shuja spokesperson, tells VOA's Douglas Mpuga that the joint mission was a success.
So we formed what we call Sector 4. Sector 4 is the triangle between the stand between Mombasa, Beni, and Kamanda. So the joint forces have been fighting the terrorists in that area, in that region. But then they went further towards Biakato. So yesterday, there was a contact between the joint forces and the ADF, and the 27 of them were put out of action. We recovered several guns, and most importantly, were children and women, totaling to 40. They are evacuated, they are flown out of Biakato, and they now are receiving medical attention. Some of them were injured. The children are malnourished. The women are not in good condition, so they are receiving medical attention from the Joint Forces medical team.
And these people, how long have they been with the ADF?
They have spent different periods with the ADF. Now, the ADF continues to abduct in the areas where they run to. But some joined as far back as 10 years back, 15 years back. They've had children from the bush, from the forest. Some mothers have children 10 years, 15 years, who were rescued also. So you find others were abducted a few months back. That's a challenge with the ADF, that they go on abducting people.
Now, this joint American offensive, Operation Suja, has been on for some time. How would you describe its success so far against the ADF?
I would say it's very, very successful. People have started going about their businesses in the areas where we started the operation from. We have rescued a number of people, a number of abductees. That's very important for us. Some schools in Ituri have already opened up. The trade traffic between Uganda and DRC has increased in eastern DRC. So we are gaining some normalcy in the areas where we've been operating, and that's very important for us. Two, we've highly neutralized. We have made ADF capacity to wage war against Uganda and Congo and the people of both countries. They are very weak now. They have less manpower. We have recovered most of the weapons they are using, so they're on the run. If this momentum continues, I assure you, ADF will be no more.
How would you describe the cooperation you get from the Congolese forces?
It's very, very strong cooperation. The operation is joint. We work together. Wherever we go, Faradays and UPDs, we work together closely. We have joint planning meeting together, operational review meetings together. So we are moving very smoothly. That's why we've been able to score this success. If I don't work together jointly, possibly the success will not be as significant as it is today.
Major Bilal Katamba is the spokesperson for the Ugandan Army Mountain Division and Operation Shuja. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Mpuga from Fort Porter. A new global Gallup poll released Tuesday shows South Africa is one of the countries in the world where citizens feel the least safe walking alone. Kate Bartlett spoke to people on the streets of Johannesburg about why they do not feel safe in their city.
32-year-old bartender Gugu Zakaza was mugged by two men while walking home from the grocery store one day. She says that was the last time she risked walking anywhere alone.
But I'd never walk around these streets. Firstly, because obviously South Africans' crime status is very, very high. And also, it's not just safe for a woman to just be walking around at night because obviously we might be taken advantage of. So rather safe than sorry.
She is not alone. Karabo Faith, 23, says she no longer walks anywhere by herself.
I almost got mugged at night when I came from Guru with my friends and we're walking going home. So this other guy was like, hey, give us your phone. And then luckily these police officers came through, so they never took our phones. But we were scared.
The latest Gallup poll on global safety asked people in 140 countries how safe they felt walking alone. Some 70% of South Africans responded that they did not feel safe, ranking in the bottom three countries, which also included Ecuador and Liberia. Gallup is a global analytics and advisory firm. Gallup's Julie Ray says sub-Saharan Africa has had low rankings in the annual poll for years. The survey found feelings of safety have declined more here than any other region.
The region has ranked among the least safe in terms of people's perceptions for almost two decades.
By contrast, citizens in Kuwait, Singapore, and Norway said they all felt the safest, with between 8 and 1% feeling unsafe. Women in South Africa typically feel less safe than men, Ray said, though more men also feel unsafe now too. Confidence in police in sub-Saharan Africa is also lower than average, she said. Asked for comment on the report, Aslenda Mathe, spokesperson for the South African Police Services, said they were working on heightening police visibility.
We are making inroads in clamping down all forms of criminality, and the main goal is to ensure that we make South Africa a much safer and better place to live in so that people can walk freely.
South Africa has notoriously high crime rates. According to the latest police statistics, between April and June alone, over 6,000 murders and 9,000 rapes were recorded. Kate Bartlett, VOA News, Johannesburg.
The Uncommitted National Movement that began as a protest against President Joe Biden's policies on the war in Gaza announced last week that they will not endorse Vice President Kamala Harris, the Democratic presidential candidate. Another pro-Palestinian group, Abandon Harris, says they are working to ensure her defeat. Could these movements impact election results in battleground states? White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wadekuswara brings this story from Michigan, the state with the highest percentage of Arab Americans.
Dearborn, Michigan is known as the Arab capital of America. In this Arab-majority city, in a state that is home to almost 400,000 Arab Americans, many are angry over U.S. policies on the war in Gaza. Abdallah Doleh is a Palestinian American.
I'm not happy with what's happening, and I'm not really hopeful anything is going to change anytime soon. Even if Kamala Harris comes into play, I don't think she's going to be capable to do a whole lot of change.
I will not be silent.
Kamala Harris's campaign has been targeting Dearborn with ads showing her sympathy to the suffering in Gaza.
Vice President Harris has chosen a side.
But a political group with Republican ties is also targeting those voters with ads highlighting Harris' support for Israel and the Jewish faith of her husband, Doug Emhoff.
We can trust she'll always support Israel.
The ads appear aimed at the 100,000 Michiganders who voted uncommitted in the Democratic primary election to protest the Biden administration's support of Israel's military campaign. When Harris visited Michigan last week, the Uncommitted National Movement announced they will not endorse her.
Myself, a Palestinian American, that, I've been a lifelong Democrat. I would love to be part of the voting bloc that elects the very first black female president. But Vice President Harris has not shown me that she will protect people I care about.
Harris says she supports both Israeli security and Palestinian rights.
President Biden and I are working to end this war such that Israel is secure, the hostages are released, the suffering in Gaza ends, and the Palestinian people can realize their right to dignity, security, freedom, and self-determination.
While not endorsing Harris, the Uncommitted group also opposes Donald Trump, who they fear is even more supportive of Israel.
When I'm back in the Oval Office, I will support Israel's right to win its war on terror. They have to have a right to win the war.
Another pro-Palestinian group, Abandon Harris, says it's working to ensure her defeat, even if it means a Trump victory. Co-chair Farah Khan.
I don't think there's any difference in policy when it comes to Palestine or foreign policy when you talk about these two. They're equally evil. So it doesn't really matter to me.
Abandon Harris is encouraging voters to support anti-war third-party candidates, such as Green Party nominee Jill Stein.
In this swing state, Harris and Trump are virtually tied in the polls. In 2020, Biden won over Trump by 154,000 votes. And in 2016, Trump won over Hillary Clinton by just under 11,000 votes.
But losing votes over Gaza may not necessarily mean Harris loses Michigan. The United Automobile Workers Labor Union, a key political force in the state, has endorsed her, and her campaign is working to boost support from black voters. Ronald Stockton is professor emeritus at the University of Michigan.
If the black turnout goes up and Arab American voting goes down for the Democrats, will those cancel each other out? I don't know. With the unions out there banging on the doors and doing everything they can, the UAW, that's going to make a difference.
Another variable would be Trump making inroads with Arab and Muslim voters. Amir Ghalib, the Yemeni-American mayor of Hamtramck, endorsed Trump after meeting him last week. The endorsement carries symbolic significance. The city of Hamtramck is home to 30,000 people, many of them Muslim. It's the only city in the country to have an all-Muslim city council. Patsy Wadekuswara and Rifan Duyastono, VOA News, Michigan.
And that's it for this Wednesday, September 25th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for coming aboard with us this morning. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing that you will have a lovely day.
is the voice of America. Washington, Baba Bozet, T.